The Mickey Miles Podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, who will handle your family vacation, reunion, honeymoon, corporate incentive trip, or getaway as if it were their own, bringing premium service and expert advice to help you get the most out of your vacation dollar. Visit them at MEI-travel.com or mousefantravel.com. And by All Star Vacation Homes, with locations in Kissimmee and Orlando. All Star Vacation Homes offers you alternatives for your Disney vacation with beautiful and affordable homes, condos, and townhomes near Walt Disney World. Hospitality has a new home, and its name is All Star Vacation Homes. Visit them at allstarvacationhomes.com.
Hi, this is Susan from Maine, and I listen to the Mickey Miles Podcast.
This is the Mickey Miles Podcast. From 5K fun runs to full marathons, this is the podcast that helps you learn everything you need to know about running Disney races. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 199 of the Mickey Miles Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa from WDW Today and touringplans.com, and with me on the show, as always, is my co-host, Dr. Michelle Scribner-McLean. Hello, Michelle.
Hello, Mike. I don't think we look a day older than 190. I don't know. We've been taking our vitamins.
It's the way the sun comes in through the windows, I think.
Yes, we've both been busily working on show number 200.
Episode 200, you know, I've been... haven't been able to shave or bathe or eat or anything. I've been chained to the to my computer and getting all this stuff in because, you know, we got to be on time and
yesterday,
we want to make sure that we do everything.
Yeah, yesterday possible. I was grading papers and listening to music to put on the podcast and grading papers and converting the Skype phone
in
calls.
In a run too.
Yeah. So we have a shout out today, and our shout out is to Sarah Goff. And Sarah, I asked people to post a picture with themselves on their runs on Saturday, and Sarah posted a cute little picture with her niece, and they both got PRs. So congratulations, Sarah.
Congratulations, Sarah.
Huzzah.
Huzzah.
All right, so I can't wait to talk about today's topic because 200 is going to be fun, but this one is going to be really fun too.
And I think as we talk about it, and we have a very special guest on, we're going to talk about something that I think a lot of people may already have known about, but we're going to dig deep into how it all came about. And
are we
going
to do some investigative running reporting here?
Investigating reporting. So let's get right to it. So I believe it was on August 9th that our own Phil Vanderpool decided to do something to raise some money for Give Kids the World. And he issued a challenge out there. He said, if you would be kind enough to donate some money, I will ride Stitch for a certain amount of time, depending upon how much money is donated. And Phil was ready to do this on August 9th. And what happened was that he raised a lot of money, more than he thought he was going to be raising, and he ended up writing. Well, I'll let
Phil tell
the story. But so we want to invite Phil on the show. How you doing, Phil?
Very good. Thanks for having me back on.
You have recovered. I think what we want to do is we want to go through the whole fundraising idea that you had. And so let's start from the top. Where did the idea come from for you to ride Stitch's Great Escape all day to raise money for Give Kids the World?
It all started from, I'd been raising money for Team All Ears for the last 3 years, and the commitment was $500. And, you know, basically, I found the tactics that I had were, you know, while they were useful, they were pretty boring. You know, I would basically just ask friends and family, and that was it. And everybody else had these crazy, you know, fundraising ideas. I think, our friend Amanda had a movie night at her place, and, you know, Michael Miller sold magnets. And I wanted to do something different. And I first had started with, you know, I live very close to the Magic Kingdom, and I wanted to come up with a way to incorporate that. And, in the beginning, it was like, you know, I'm going to do the Ultimate Magic Kingdom Touring Plan, and people will maybe sponsor me for the amount of rides that I complete. But, you know, as I asked for feedback for that, I realized, you know, that really is just, you know, people are just ask, you know, you're asking money from people for you to go have fun. So I figured, what's the worst ride there that I could do? And, you know, ultimately Stitch came to mind, although I could think of worse after doing Stitch now. I figured if I could kind of incorporate that and, you know, ride Stitch for this time period that, you know, people had that passion or that almost a dispassion for it, that I could probably raise more money than I was used to doing with All Ears. The All Ears amount was about 500, and I wanted to do more than that. I figured 500 would be the minimum that I would do, and it ultimately worked out great.
So this time you were raising money for the Mickey Milers and Give Kids the World, right?
Yes.
And what did you do to prepare for this whole experience? And how did you set it up, the fundraising challenges that you put up? Because you had some sort of tiers of if you got this much, you would do this many rides and things like that.
I started out with a tier. The the $500 was going to be the minimum amount that I was going to do for this. And I figured $500 for 4 hours would be fair. And then I figured that, you know, if I did 1,000, I would do 8 hours. And to be honest with you, I really didn't think I was going to get over 1,000. I had three tiers in the beginning. I ended up switching it at the end, but I figured if I got 2,000 that I would do it all day, which at the time was 14 hours. And they ended up switching the park hours and adding an additional hour. So at the end, it ended up being 15 hours.
Oh, my God. So yeah. What did you prepare? How did you prepare for this?
Honestly, pretty much, and I'm ashamed to say this, pretty much like every marathon I run, I honestly don't really prepare too much for it. I had been on Stitch for about, I think, one time in my life, and that was about 2 years ago, and I honestly didn't remember it. I just knew it was horrible, and I didn't want to go back on it again.
Wow, and you live so close, you could go on whenever you wanted to.
I could, but, you know, the height requirement, I have every ride I do, I pretty much have to do with my daughter, and she's only about 36 inches, and the Stitch requirement is 40 inches, so it has never come up before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, Phil, when you come up with this idea, and you say, okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go on this attraction for an extended period of time. Did anything go through your mind regarding what kind of issues, problems, obstacles, challenges, fears that you'd have to figure out how to deal with during the course of the day?
Well, I treated it very much like I was going to run a marathon. I mean, most of, you know, marathon is definitely skill and conditioning, but, you know, after you get past maybe mile, for me anyway, for mile 14, it's pretty much in your own head. I knew that the challenges that I'd have to have is nutrition, and I would have to find some place to, you know, to have my little break. So I actually, the way I did the research was I went to Touring Plans and looked at the average wait time. And I figured the ride itself is 10 minutes, and I think it's 10 minutes, 28 seconds. Hmm. And the average wait time was anywhere from 10 minutes to 20 minutes, depending on the time of day at this time of year. So I figured mentally I could do that 10 minutes on the ride and then 10 minutes of freedom. And nutrition, I just packed a big backpack full of peanut butter sandwiches and granola bars and water, because, you know, everybody kept asking me, you know, are you going to stop for lunch? Where are you going to go for lunch? And, you know, I had said that I was going to do it all day, from rope drop to park close, and breaking for lunch, I don't think really met the spirit of it, especially considering, that I could bring my own stuff in. So that's pretty much how I handle it. And then I guess the only extra challenge was finding a bathroom. And, you know, basically that was a lot easier than I suspected. There's actually one right out of a Mickey Star Trader. So if you get that out of that exit.
We know that one from running.
Yes.
To the Magic Kingdom.
And I had never been on Stitch. I went on it one time, so I didn't really realize that it emptied out into two separate places. So, you know, if I got out on Merchants of Venus, then I wasn't going to use the restroom. If I got out at Mickey Star Traders, then that was the time.
Mm-hmm. So can you take us through the day getting up and then all the way through the day, what it was like?
Yeah, sure. I mean, getting up was very easy. You know, it was almost very race-like. I had prepared the night before and laid out all of my food, my water, clothes, you know, everything I was going to bring with me. I got up and it was just like a regular rope drop experience in the Magic Kingdom. I was waiting around, but then I noticed a whole bunch of cast members who kept walking in with people that had reservations, and I started talking up, and I walked in with a whole group. So I actually got in a little early, which was good because I got to walk around Main Street, take some pictures. Ended up at Tomorrowland right at the front gate, and I got in a little too early because I think it was there about 8 a.m. And then I realized my mistake because I realized that I had, 16 extra hours to go through at that point. So really it was just waiting and preparing and looking at my nemesis because I knew it was going to be tough. But then regular rope drop happened and, they pushed us back to the hub and walked through. And the first ride, I was the only person on there, and it was a little it was a little awkward, but I knew it wasn't going to be as awkward as that second ride immediately afterwards. So,
now, did you share with the cast members what you were doing?
I did, but it was actually tough. I thought I'd have more cast member interaction because I thought they would question me a little bit more and I would have a chance to speak with them. But the cast members at Stitch, it's a little different than the cast members at another ride. I think, they're very enforcive. I think so much of the ride depends on being in the dark. And with the cell phone culture that we have, I think most of the cast members spend their time herding people through the gates. And then once you're inside, they're almost the cell phone police. Because if somebody turns their cell phone on during the actual ride, most of it's ruined. Because then you can see all of the magic that occurs. So a lot of them, towards the end of the night, I got to know them a little bit more when there wasn't so many people to actually talk to. But in the beginning of the day, it was a very, very quick rotation. I was very surprised about that.
So you got on, went through the pre-show, went. It's two pre-shows, right? There's like a
It's two pre-shows. You're right. There's first they herd you in through the main gates while you're outside in the pen, and then when you get inside, there's the video, and then there's the actual pre-show where Stitch actually gets caught, and then you go through the actual show. And for me, it was repeat over and over and over again.
And so then you would just come out and then go right back into the queue.
Right back into the queue. Yep.
Wow. And you weren't using your cell phone during any of it?
Well, I was sending updates. So I have an iPhone 4S and the battery life's not that great. And I had an extra battery, but I had to kind of conserve as much as possible. So I would put an update out maybe in the beginning, it was every ride. And then I realized I was going to run into trouble very quickly. So it was, probably every other ride eventually. And then after that, it was after like every moment or, towards the end of it, I started to go a little crazy. So I put out whatever I possibly could.
Yeah, but I have to say I was in Austin when you were doing this and I was following along, and my son Liam said, "Mom, what he's doing is far worse than any marathon." And I said, "You know what, Liam? I think you're right. I really do. I think it's, especially for Phil, it's much more of an endurance event than a marathon. Would you agree?"
Big time. I mean, really, towards the end, it was strange. I kind of developed, this one. For the first 2 hours, it was, "I hate this ride. I hate this ride." Then for maybe the next four after that, it was like, it's not that bad. And I started looking for the good things about the ride and why it's appealing and why Disney hasn't done anything about it. And then after that, for the rest of it, for 5 to 7 hours, I was just trying to keep count of how many times I'd been on and just trying to get every little thing to get me through it. Like, "Oh, there's a cast member change. That's fantastic. Okay, somebody new to talk to." Or, it's just look for some other element to kind of focus on.
So, Phil, I have a couple questions. Did you find yourself sitting in the same location every time you went in?
I did, but not intentionally. So for there's different conditions. There's two theaters of Stitch. You can either go in and go to the left and go to the right, and there's different effects that work. I think that Stitch would be an okay ride if all of the effects fired at all the same times, but there's nuances in how the handlebars come down. There's some areas of where you're going to get drenched because you're right underneath the water, and then there's areas with that smell. The smell is the worst part. But there were some seats where it wouldn't just be cold air having that scent. It was warm, hot air. And that was terrible. So I ended up finding seats that would avoid the water, avoid the smell. and pretty much just get me through it as quickly as possible with as little interference as I could stand.
If you think about it, if you go through that attraction for 12, 14, 16 hours, you begin to notice trends, or you begin to notice things that happen over and over again. And I was going to ask you, if you could recall one, two, three, or a handful of things that were reoccurring themes regarding reaction by the guests, what would stick out? What do you remember or recall from that particular day?
Well, number one, the smell, right? I mean, everybody liked it. It's definitely a ride for young boys. I mean, they got a kick out of it. But, you know, I honestly thought that it was a terrible ride, and I still do. But I see the appeal, because almost every ride that I saw or ride through, everybody loved it. Everybody had a great time. I think for a one and done, it's probably a good experience. I think the kids have a good time. So when the kids have a good time, the parents have a good time. Doesn't have a lot of re-rideability. But the trend was, when the lights go out, the kids get scared, then they start to laugh. The parents laugh, and generally it was the same reaction every time, which I found kind of shocking. I mean, there wasn't a lot of groans, and I see why Disney keeps it around.
Really? Wow.
I do. I mean, it's a people eater, and people seem to enjoy it. And if you're just there for, you know, one trip a year, or, you know, one trip every 2 years, it's an experience. It's a quick line. You know, it's maybe 10, 15 minutes. You get in on average, and your kids enjoy it. So I see why it's still there.
So tell us what it was like. The finish was 16 hours from your time of start. So that's
15 hours, 20 minutes.
Okay. Why 15 hours, 20 minutes?
They opened up the park early.
Oh, okay. So what was it like when you rode for the last time?
It was, towards the end of the night, it was, I wanted to get it over with. And I was sitting there, and I noticed that the crowd rotations are different depending on the time of day. But towards the end of the night, you maybe wait 30 minutes with 20 of those minutes just being outside. They gather as many people as they can in the pen before they let you in. So my last hour, I was averaging about 3 rides an hour, and I got I got 2 rides in at the 11 o'clock hour. That was mostly because they were just keeping us waiting. And that was actually the worst part and the best part, because I just wanted to be done with it. But on the bright side, I didn't have to be inside and see that pre-show all over again. I didn't have to smell the smell all over again. I mean, it was fantastic just to kind of wait outside, and I had company at that point. So I was just kind of waiting outside, having a conversation instead of riding the ride. And the funny part was, I was just so used to it, I didn't realize that it was after midnight after the last ride, and it was extra magic hours that night. And I had already done my time, so I had actually gotten online again and figured, oh my God, the last ride wasn't the last ride. And I looked down at my watch and said, nope, that was it, and took the chicken exit right out. I was just so used to getting in. But
that's great. So, before we ask you about your help, can you tell us what your total was? How many times did you ride Stitch? And
I kind of lost count towards the end, okay. But I'm at the minimum 38, at the maximum was 41, 42.
Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing. So you had a buddy too for some of it. You want to tell us who joined you?
Sure, yes. I'd never met him before. I hope he's not embarrassed by me saying this. I want to say very, very much thank you to David Koch from Queens, New York. David was very very touching in the beginning of it. When I put the call out for fundraising, David actually had reservations to swim with the dolphins at the Living Seas, or Seas with Nemo and Friends at Epcot. And he actually canceled his reservation so that he could donate to the cause. And that's a nice chunk of change. But then in addition to that, he gave up time on his vacation and rode with me for 2 hours during the day in the early morning, and then actually came back and rode the last hour out. So I just want to say thank you to David. I mean, it was really made the experience a lot better It's just nice to have somebody there to kind of share that with you so you can get out of your head for a little bit.
I think I want to mention, too, that I know David, and I believe David has volunteered at Give Kids the World, too.
Yes, he does.
Yeah,
he
David's does. A huge volunteer at Give Kids the World. He had actually volunteered, I think it was 2 or 3 days before that. So that was kind of his motivation for being so generous and for coming to stay there with me.
Was that nice. He's a super nice guy. And a teacher.
Oh, yes.
And a teacher, too. So we want to hear what the grand total was. How you were hoping for 500.
How much? I was hoping for 500. I figured I'd get 1,000. Towards the last, for the end of the time that I put out for the donation window, I said, okay, if I get 1,500, I'll do 12 hours. And as of the Friday before, I had, I think, 1,300. And there was a last-minute fundraising drive started by Eddie McCoy. So thanks, and I hate you, Eddie. and he ended up getting, the total went up to, I think it was 17 and change. And so I said 12 hours. Okay, I could do 12 hours. And then towards the last minute, during the actual ride experience, everyone just started. I mean, it was amazing. Everybody started sharing it, and donations started pouring in. I mean, you guys put the word out. People started sharing their statuses, and next thing I know, I see you've met your fundraising total from Give Kids the World. So at that point, I knew that I might as well settle in because I'm doing the whole day. So they end up the total ended up being $2,070.
Oh my gosh, I have goosebumps. That's amazing.
It was really, really cool. I couldn't believe that everybody kind of came through and did that. And it was definitely a team effort. I mean, everybody put the word out. Michael Miller sold magnets. Everybody shared their status. I mean, I rode the ride, but this was without a doubt a team effort to get here.
Oh, that's so great. So when you join the Mickey Milers, you need to raise $50 to just everybody, let everybody know.
So Phil's good for
So for, Phil's good for a few
for
30
years. 30 years. You're good for 30 years.
What's Eve going to do?
Yeah.
So I have another question. I don't know if Mike does. Do you mind if I jump in, Mike?
Go ahead.
So, I have two questions. The first one is, would you do this again?
I would do it again, but I would definitely not do Stitch.
Okay.
I mean, the only I'm thinking of how I would, what would be worse, really? And really the answer is, if you would do Stitch for the 24-hour events that they've been doing, and that's ludicrous. There's no way I would do that.
Attraction would you do? That was my second question.
I think if I was going to do it again, I'm not committing to anything, but if I was going to do it again, I think I would have to do Small World.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Everybody kept saying, hey, well, Stitch is bad, but at least it's not Small World. But I mean, to be honest with you, I think Buzz Lightyear would be harder. It doesn't seem it, but I mean, part of the draw of people donating was that it's a terrible ride. So people like Buzz Lightyear, so that's out of the question. But Small World, you kind of get a 50-50 reaction. I think the donations would come for Small World and just the fact that you'd have to endure that song for however long.
Now, did you have any lasting effects? Like when you went to sleep at night, did you hear the soundtrack or...
I didn't hear the soundtrack, but I'm strong. I was joking around with Eve today, and I think I have kind of a form of Stockholm syndrome here where, I'm drawn to Stitch merchandise. We were in the old Key West gift shop and I saw a Stitch mug and I'm like, oh, that's fantastic. And, my daughter wanted a Stitch doll and I was like, yep, you got it right there. And I just realized, I'm like, wait a minute.
Wow, that's how Disney does it, huh?
Yeah.
So, Phil, before we let you go, I think that you've set a standard and you've established a way of fundraising, and I think that there will be people who are listening to this who are thinking about either coming up with their own unique way of fundraising or may actually take your lead and try something like you've done. And so I think what I would like to know from you is if you could advise someone to plan something like this. What kind of advice would you give them that you've learned, riding Stitch for God knows how many hours? What kind of advice would you give anyone who would be planning to do something like this?
See, first of all, don't do it. Find something else. I mean, I think it's a good. It was a great experience. And actually, I think what I've learned though is that the Disney community is just amazing. Just the outpouring of support that I received on the last day when there was sort of a social media momentum that built, and just kind of getting the encouragement from strangers was great. And I would advise somebody to try to do something that would tap into that. It's very tough, I mean, to get the word out, to get the donations in. But I think if you just hit at it, I mean, if I was going to do this again, I would have started promoting it, you know, probably 2 months. I think I gave myself 5.5, close to 6 weeks, but I probably would have pushed this out 8 weeks, and that would have built. But I think, you know, what I did was just take advantage of your, the surroundings that you have, and try to find something that works for you. I mean, I'm very, very fortunate to live so close to the Magic Kingdom. And, it, you know, honestly, at the end of the day, it's really not a big deal if I have to ride a ride for, you know, 15 hours. You know, it's just find something that, that you can do and tap into the community that you have around you.
And use social media too, huh?
And use social media, yeah. Social media was a huge help in this. And, you know, I had been around it. I had never seen the social media snowball before. I mean, I've seen it happen and been around, you know, limited facets. But, I mean, to actually have it all come together, you know, like it did was, it was kind of a perfect storm. And it was amazing.
That's really cool. Well, we are very proud to call you our friend. You have a lot of heart, and huge congratulations, because that must have been stressful. But what a great cause, and you're a leader for so many people. And thank you so much for sharing your story.
So, in honor of Phil's accomplishment, in which he's helping some very many children in the Give Kids the World Village, and in honor of his accomplishment and his Herculean effort, we're going to forego our regular clothes. We're going to forego the ad reads. We're going to forego Rick Gregg taking us out. And if you can hear just beyond my voice, you can hear a song that we are playing to honor Phil's accomplishment. And Michelle, do you want to explain to everyone what that song is if they don't recognize it?
Okay. So, I don't know if Phil knows this group. Do you know Flight of the Conchords?
Of course.
Well, this is a song that they produced to fundraise for sick kids in New Zealand called Feel Inside. Do you know the song?
I don't know the song, no.
So if you get a chance, go on YouTube and look at the video for how they wrote the song. They actually had kids write the song, and stars from New Zealand sing it. So it's a great song. It's all with kids' lyrics.
So we want everyone to hear the song, and we will have a... we will have the link in the show notes. We'll send it to our show notes guy, Rich Gehring, who is somewhere on his way to Manila, I think. Somewhere. And Phil, thank you very much, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure.
So for Phil Vanderpool, for Michelle Scriven-McLean, and for Flight of the Conchords, this is Mike Scopa saying we'll see you on the road.
Let's go.